going beyond the headlines to the deeper issues. 96.3 WHUR and HUR Voices, Sirius XM Channel 141. This is the Insight Segment, where your questions and comments matter at 202-319-7810. Join the conversation.
Welcome back to the Daily Drum on WHUR and Sirius XM Channel 141. This is the Insight Segment. I'm Harold Fisher. It is President's Day, a national holiday. But tonight, we're going to ask you to do a bit of critical thinking. We're asking you tonight, if you were President of the United States, what would you do? How would you lead America? Well, my guests are Dr. Avis Jones DeWeaver. She's a political strategist, and comedian Larry Lancaster. And you, the listener, lines are open, 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Tweet us using the hashtag WHURFM. And just a reminder, we will take as many phone calls as we can tonight. A little bit of a provocative question for you. So certainly if you're having difficulty getting in, please keep trying. We will take phone calls even after 7:30. Hey, Avis, how are you?
I am great. How are you?
Good. Good to talk to you. Larry, thanks for coming in. I appreciate it.
Thank you, sir. Wasn't doing nothing.
Well, you're going to do something tonight.
How you going to have me on with a political strategist, an expert, man?
Well, you know, comedians also have big brains, definitely. But we're going to start with another big brain. Avis, besides turning the White House into the Black House, because I know you.
Oh my God.
Yes, indeed. But when you think about this question, if you, Dr. Avis Jones DeWeaver, were President of the United States, Commander in Chief, what's the first thing that comes to mind? What would be your first course of action?
Well, since, you know, Trump has now set this precedent where you can have national emergencies, I would declare a real national emergency and make sure that the people of Flint have clean water. That would probably be my first order of business. Beyond that, I would definitely reverse the tax plan that he pushed through that we know now. Actually, we told people and they didn't believe us, but now everybody is seeing that the results of that was really just to help the uber, uber rich, and everybody else is really getting the short end of the stick, to say the least, with that. I would do other work around maybe looking at that Green Deal, but doing it in a way that it focuses on creating infrastructure and jobs that would both help the environment and make sure that people have good-paying jobs, good-paying employment, particularly in communities that oftentimes are overlooked with those things. And finally, I think I would do a lot as it relates to investing in places like HBCUs and just make sure also that we would have some sort of a focus within the DOJ, Department of Justice, around this issue of white identity extremists, because we know that we've seen a spike in hate crimes under this administration. So those are a few of the things that I would probably touch on.
Oh, yeah. Interesting. Very, very interesting. Madam Commander in Chief.
Very thoughtful ideas. Great ideas.
Larry, what about you? What's the first thing that would come to mind? Because Avis threw out, I would argue, some good ones.
Of course, yes. I would definitely want to implement common sense gun control.
What does that mean for you?
To me, it doesn't mean taking away people's guns, as the people always try to, the opponents always try to argue. But just, first of all, eliminating those military-type magazines where you can go in and shoot up 100 people in a matter of seconds. No one should have that type of capability except law enforcement or the military. It's not for hunting. Eliminating that type of thing. And also finding some kind of way to really think about crazy people, because most of those people won't have records.
You mean people with mental health issues?
Yes. I'm not politically correct. It's right. Crazy people going to Walgreens and shoot up the place. That's a crazy person.
Yeah.
People with mental issues. I'm kind of trying to dissect that issue, because I understand, you know, you have issues with what's the word I'm looking for? As far as betraying people's mental health or the knowledge of getting out.
Okay.
Insurance reform to include health insurance, prison reform, federal mandate for better salaries education, a cap on prescription medication, task force to release people wrongly convicted, law enforcement reform to weed out crooked and racist cops, federal mandates for prosecutors also to ensure fairness and eliminate racial biases.
So you're talking about overall criminal justice reform.
Mm-hmm.
Something you just said kind of struck me. You said kind of, you know, weeding out racist cops. I want to get to the weed bit. Senator Kamala Harris has spoken about legalizing.
Oh, I see how you did that. That was clever.
Yeah, well, I do listen to you now, but she.
Let's get to the weed bit.
Yeah, and all jokes aside, I mean, you know, years ago, several years ago, there are a lot of people who were put in prison. A lot of black people, a mm-hmm. lot of brown people who are serving really, really long sentences for nonviolent marijuana offenses
mm-hmm.
as president. And this goes for you too, Avis. I'll ask you, but first I want to ask Larry, should marijuana be legal nationally?
Well, I believe it's going to be. It's just a matter of time. And I believe all those people who were convicted for those crimes should be released.
Mm-hmm. Avis?
I completely agree. It needs to be legalized nationwide. People need to be released, and their records need to be expunged. When you think about marijuana and you compare the health effects of that as compared to even nicotine, smoking, like cigarettes, which are legal right now, mm-hmm. tends to be, from the research that I've seen, more dangerous to people's health than cannabis is. And so, you know, it was a completely arbitrary, I believe, decision that was made years ago. The roots of it, quite frankly, is a very racist policy.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, it definitely needs to be legalized, and those people who are currently serving sentences need to be set free.
I would take this a step further. If you're going to do that, and as you just suggested, Avis, that you set those people who have been serving time for nonviolent marijuana offenses, if you set them free, if it is legal, that there also needs to be and I could get in a lot of trouble for this, but there needs to be preferential treatment for those businessmen and women coming out of the prison system,
mm-hmm.
whether it's small business loans, as it relates to medical marijuana, mm-hmm. or if it's recreational marijuana, because as we are seeing now, particularly in places like Colorado, mm-hmm. that there are people who are getting rich,
right. And you know that black people are probably, or people of minorities are going to be cut out of that.
Absolutely. And I think there needs to be business plan training. There should be small business loans mm-hmm. for those people. If you're going to make it legal
right.
across the board, and you're going to let these people out,
mm-hmm.
you're going to have a place for them to go, because they already, in varying degrees, already know
have
that
the expertise.
Business.
Right. It's no
right.
different than with the how they hire hackers. You know, people who...
Yeah. Right.
There you go. How about
so
that?
So you could use that as a precedent.
Mm. 202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. We're asking tonight, if you were president of the United States, what would you do? Let's go to Linda. Linda, calling from D.C. Thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
Good evening. Thanks
Hi.
For having me. One of the things I want to look at as president is the constituents that I'm supposed to represent. To other countries, it looks like our president is actually becoming a joke and making us as a country itself not trustworthy. If I were another country looking at us now, I could not think of the U.S. as it was 10, 12, 15 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
As president, I would change that. I would put respect into everything I do, and I would think about this country and all it has done for every other country out there in order for them to have basic rights.
Hmm.
Okay. And in doing so, I need to be a good representative. I need to be able to sit at a table without throwing a tantrum and understand everyone's point of view, digesting what they have said, and then try and regurgitate a plan that's actually going to benefit everyone. If only by a teaspoonful, then by an entire plateful, that everyone's going to benefit from something that I actually put into action. By also taking a look at all the people who have, let's say, billions of dollars, as opposed to a Southeast individuals that do not have that, but yet has been this year. And it does.
Linda, I'm sorry. You're breaking up, and I apologize because I wanted to get your last point. But my panelists did hear what you had to say. Avis, it seems to me as if she was talking about bringing back a sense of self-respect.
Absolutely, and respect on the international stage. And
yeah.
She has really touched on a very important issue because she's right. I mean, I would argue that internationally speaking, we're a laughingstock at the
mm-hmm.
moment. Nobody takes this country seriously anymore. We've shown that. Also, we've shown that they can't trust us mm-hmm. as a nation. Our allies can't trust us, and those people who are current inhabitants of the White House is buddies with. I really believe that they're back in Russia, they're back in China, laughing their tails off at this idiot.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, there is a lot of international relationship repairing that would need to happen in the next administration, whoever that is. And it's a critically important issue that really cannot be in any way minimized.
202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. If you were president of the United States today, what would you do? How would you lead the country? Let me go to Greg. Greg, calling from Maryland. Thanks for calling, Greg. What's on your mind? Greg, are you there?
Yeah, I'm there.
Go right ahead. What's on your mind?
Yeah. Thank you very much. If I'm to be the president of the United States, I am going to be very careful in choosing the choice of words. I'm going to be more diplomatic. I'm going to be more diplomatic in choosing my word, because sometimes being the president, your word can cause division. Your word can cause a lot of problem in every sector, and your word is going to encourage or discourage, you know, the foreign investors coming in or interacting, you know, with the United States. So if I'm to be the president of the United States, I'm going to be very, very diplomatic in my choice of word, the kind of word I tweet, mm-hmm. the kind of word I make. So
okay.
That's it. Thank you.
Well, thank you so much, Greg. Now here's the thing about that, because one could argue that Donald Trump has brought a different kind of vocabulary, certainly a different a different tone to the White
that's
House.
That's a nice way of putting it.
Yeah, that's true. But let me submit this to you, Larry, is that one of the highest profile freshman Democrats, Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, AOC, as she's called, she has done very much the same. She has not always been careful with her information.
Mm-hmm.
She has not always been careful with her words. Some people have called her the Sarah Palin of liberal politics.
Mm-hmm.
Doesn't it go both ways?
Yeah, it has to go both ways, because you always want to be fair. And if you go against, you go after the Republicans for something, then you also have to make sure you clean up your house as well.
Avis, your thoughts?
Well, that's true, but I do think that it's quite a stretch to mm-hmm. suggest that she's in any way like Sarah Palin. Now, come on, she's never said anything as completely vacuous as I can see Russia from my house
mm-hmm.
and claims that she can't even tell you. And really, you can tell from her lack of mastery of subject matter, doesn't read anything.
Mm-hmm.
Clearly, AOC is someone who she's passionate, yes. She believes strongly what she believes, but anyone that can sit there and listen to 5 minutes of what she's saying can tell that she does have a mastery of many issues.
Mm-hmm.
I would say a much higher level of mastery than the person sitting in the Oval Office right now.
Well, there you go. 202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. If you were president of the United States, how would you lead America? What would you do? What would you do differently than is being done right now under the Trump administration? Give us a call. Let me know what you think. Byron Byron calling from Maryland. Hey, Byron, thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
Yes, I just wanted to give a call to say I think that we should definitely, if I was president, I would try to build the relationship of the American people together again. I think we have been so severed in regards of just hate crimes and what have you. I think we just need to focus on building America's love and peace for each other. It's been so terrible over the last few years. I'm a young African-American male, and I think that we should definitely be building our strength with one another again.
Mm, interesting. Byron, thank you so much. I think that is one of the things that has seriously taken a hit over the past 2 years. You could argue that there was a segment of the population during the Obama years that also took a step back from some of the racial issues, some of the social issues. How would you bring the country together, Larry?
Again, by understanding that if you have the presidential office, that you're everyone's president. And so you can't just, as Donald Trump tends to do, speak to a very small segment, which is your base. And that's all he's concerned with. And that's the other thing, too, with gerrymandering, because a lot of things happen with when President Obama was in office, that the Republicans did a lot of things because we fell asleep at the wheel. We weren't really watching things. They redistrict things. They had a lot of we didn't vote in those primary elect. They didn't vote in the midterms. So a lot of the state legislatures were Republican. A lot of the governors were Republican. So they all had the same agenda, even though it was at the state level. If everyone does the same thing at a state level, then it kind of becomes almost at a federal nationwide level. So we have to keep our eye on those things. And the Republicans are great at relitigating battles that we've already won. They never give up on things. They never say, okay, we lost that one. Let's move on to something else. They still go after abortion rights. They still go after voter act rights and things of that nature. So you got to keep your eyes on everything.
Absolutely. Particularly as we see what's happening in North Carolina right now in the 9th Congressional District down in North Carolina. No congressperson seated in that race. Allegations of voter fraud, misconduct, and all other kinds of foolishness. And I think that is one of the things that really needs to be paid attention to. Yet another emergency, Avis, that I would argue takes precedent over the wall situation. But how would you?
Oh yeah.
But how would you attempt to bring this nation together?
You know, those were excellent points that were raised a second ago. I kind of believe that he has some political strategist in him somewhere. I don't think he's 100% comedian.
like I said, comedians
but
are smart
I would say
people.
That in that's right. So, but in addition to those points, I would say that, you know, we also have to have a president that shows moral standing and that is someone who will specifically not back away from chastising racist acts. You know, when you have someone who is a president that says that people who are in the KKK and Nazis are very fine people, that sends a message to that specific population. Mm-hmm. When you have a president who retweets tweets by white supremacists, that sends a message to that population. When you have a president that jumps on every murder when it's committed by someone who is Muslim, by someone who is black or brown, but when a white male
Avis, hold your point right there, because I'm going to let you finish, but I've got to take a really quick break. 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. If you were president of the United States, what would you do? Stay with us. The Daily Drum will continue on Sirius XM, Channel 141. I'm Harold Fisher. Jeff Brown is next with the original Quiet Storm on WHUR. This conversation continues on Sirius XM, and we're going to take more of your phone calls. Stay with us.
The Howard University Radio Network is WHUR 96.3 FM, WHUR World 96.3 HD2, student-run WHBC HD3, GlassHouseRadio.com, SiriusXM Channel 142, HBCU, and SiriusXM Channel 141, HUR Voices, Washington.
Welcome back to the Daily Drum on SiriusXM, Channel 141. I'm Harold Fisher. Tonight, on this President's Day, we are asking you, if you were President of the United States, what would you do? How would you lead America? My guests are Dr. Avis Jones-DeWeaver, political strategist, and comedian Larry Lancaster. Lines are still open in 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Avis, you left off about retweeting white supremacists and the like. Mm-hmm.
Absolutely. And when we have a tragedy, a national tragedy, where you do have mass shootings that are statistically, they're most likely done by white males. And when we do have hate crimes that occur in America, you never hear any response. I mean, he tweets about everything else, but as it relates to those issues, he completely, I would argue, condones by his silence. Mm-hmm. And so we have to have someone that shows some moral center, some moral fortitude that's really that's willing to stand up to racism while at the same time reaching out to bring people together.
Interesting. 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Ray, calling from D.C. Mr. President Ray, what would you do?
Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I like listening to your show.
Thank you so much.
If I was the president, can you hear me?
Yes, sir. Go ahead. Go right ahead.
As a black man, not from Africa, but as a black man in America, I would be really strict on some of the young black people for doing some of the foolish things that they're doing now.
Strict how? And what kind of foolishness, Ray, specifically?
Making sure that they serve the time that they need to serve for doing some of the things. I think the government plays with people too much. That's why we have so much people in jail today. They don't do what they need to do. I feel like they don't, because the jail wouldn't be so full if people get really tough on them and make them pay for what they do.
Hmm. Okay.
Killing babies, killing people, gang banging, all this stuff. They just sit them in jail and let them serve the time and let them sit there and rot. But I really don't think that they'll punishing these people for what they're doing. And as a black man, you just get sick and tired of turning on the TV and seeing something simple, mischievous thing that these black people are doing every day.
Okay. Ray, thank you so much. Larry, Ray says if he were president, he'd be tough on crime.
Ray sound like my uncle. I understand Ray's frustration, but the criminal justice system is doing a good enough job of incarcerating black people and making sure they do all the time that they're supposed to do. I think what's missing is you have to, when you undereducate people and underemploy people, then you're going to have crime. And you're going to have issues with that. And it's generational. It doesn't just happen overnight. But as a black man, I do understand Ray's frustration, but I don't necessarily think tougher sentences and all of that is going to work, because they've tried that. They tried that through the 90s with the minimum sentencing and all those type of things.
But I mean, let's drill down a little bit. Certainly, the crack cocaine versus powder cocaine issued during the 90s is the fine point that you're making. But what about violent crime? And he mentioned gangbangers and the like. Mm-hmm. And just last week, the U.S. Attorney for the District of Columbia, along with D.C. Mayor Muriel Bowser, had a press conference, and they announced that some of their cases will be moved to federal prosecutors instead of D.C. prosecutors, where there could be longer sentences, particularly for some of the more violent criminals. And maybe, you know, that may be what Ray was talking about.
Mm-hmm. I mean, that's a good point, but again, just a broad statement, mm-hmm, saying tougher sentences, because this argument is very nuanced. And I hate gang violence because I think it's so random. It doesn't make sense. It's counterproductive. And so I do believe something should be done about it. But a lot of times tougher sentences, we've seen it. It hasn't really worked. Even with the minimum sentencing for the gun violations, you automatically do 5 years. Have we seen crime go down because of that? No. Has the drug stopped? Now, when it becomes a race issue, and now that white people are getting high for opioids and heroin, now they need help.
Mm-hmm.
So it depends on how it's looked at.
Yeah.
And it's the perception of who's doing the crime. It depends on how it's handled. And that's the issue.
Avis, your thoughts? Tough on crime.
I think we need to inject some facts into this conversation. Mm. You know, it seems like the caller has been listening to a lot of talking points mm-hmm. that people have been saying about violent crime, but it's completely detached from facts. Okay, the fact of the matter is violent crime is actually falling in America. It's dropped by 49% between 1993 and 2017. Is it zero? No, but we also need to live in the world of reality. It's not going to be zero, but the reality is that it has moved greatly in the right direction. So to suggest that, you know, we're having this huge violent crime epidemic, which is part of what this president does, he plays on people's fears and it's based on illusions and lies. So the reality is that we don't have violent crime at anywhere near the level that we had in the 1990s. Another fact that I think that it's important that he needs to recognize is that black people and other people don't get and particularly if you compare them to whites, don't get the same treatment in the criminal justice system, mm-hmm. such that if a black male and a white male shows up in front of the judge with the very same crime, the black man is more likely to get more harsh punishment than the white person who committed and was found guilty of the very same crime. So I think I'm a little kind of disturbed by his suggestion that it's black people that need to get all of this extra punishment because, number one, they already are getting extra punishment. Mm-hmm. And number two, we're not more violent now than we were 20 or 30 years ago. In fact, we're less violent now than we were then.
And go ahead,
with the point that the way we're handled by law enforcement, I mean, we've seen time and time again where these white mass shooters have been friendly arrested without any confrontation, without nonviolence, and then black motorists on a routine traffic stop end up dead. So how does that happen? And then they want to say training is the issue. No, it's not, because the police have proven that they can de-escalate situations and arrest people without violence when they're already been proven to be dangerous. They just killed multiple people and they're still armed. And some kind of way, these white men end up in prison without a scratch on them. But black people end up in jail for making a bad left turn.
Yeah.
Or a shot.
Will, calling from Dallas, Texas. Hey, Will, what's on your mind?
Hey, Al. How we doing, panel? I was calling up saying if I was able to be the president, the first thing I would do is enact a plan to shift the way we vote for our president. I would make sure that whoever won would be the president, and he would be whatever his party may be. But if he's a Republican, then the person that didn't win, that would be your Democrat in the White House as the vice president.
Wow.
That way you have that bipartisanship is built in.
That's interesting. Go ahead.
Hey, you know, I'm running in 2020, Hal.
Well, look, you and a whole lot of other folks.
Like a whole gang of people.
Might as well.
Yeah. Now, secondly, we have this issue about all the foreigners coming over here. With Trump, it's like skin color. Because if you look at Mr. Conor McGregor, who's a documented criminal, he can get on his plane and come over here when he wants to.
You're talking about the MMA boxer?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay, go right ahead. Uh-huh.
Get on his plane and come over here when he wants to. But yet he's trying to stop the other people. What I would do is I would set a plan where if I give you a visa, you come over here, you go to college, get what you want in 10 years, then you go back to your country and you implement what you learned over here to help your company, your country come up a little bit. As far as the wall is concerned, it should be something we do on donations. If you tell me I got five people in my family, put this quarter in this account, he'd be surprised how much money he can get doing it that way instead of hurting the country.
Do you think we need a wall, Will? I mean, you're down in Texas.
Hey, I'm in Texas, Harold. I'm in law enforcement, and I tell you, yes, we do. If you look at the numbers and the stats on crimes done in the last 15 years, it is a lot of foreigners that's doing the crimes.
But is it always South American people, though?
You mean You mean Central America?
Right, Central.
Mexican, right. San Salvador, mm-hmm. El Salvador.
That's where your numbers are. But like I just said, Conor McGregor came here from Ireland.
Mm-hmm.
He came over here you tell me what black man can go in New York City, throw a dolly through a bus window and get probation. No, what he got was he was doing the work on the weekend.
I get it. Well, Will, thank you. I appreciate it. And keep him safe down in Texas. 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. How's your Korean, Avis?
My Korean? Not
yes,
your
Korean. Yeah, I did.
not good at all.
Not good. Well, we'll get you an interpreter. What would you do about North Korea?
Oh, my God. Well, the first thing to do, I would just get Trump as far away from it as possible.
Well, no, but you're the president. You're the president. Keep that in mind.
Okay, good. Mm. Yes. Okay. You know, that is a hard one because you are dealing with someone there who I believe is very brutal. He's a dictator. I think that we need to bring back some really serious work with experts in the State Department in terms of working with diplomacy, maybe even some sanctions if need be in terms of if they were to continue or to ramp up their nuclear testing. But the reality is that that threat still exists. And so I think that we need to be very serious about using whatever intelligence that we might have to figure out what's going on there and trying to sort of put some pressure on in both diplomatic ways maybe some ways that would suggest that, hey, we might have to resort to sanctions if things don't improve in order to make sure that the people who are quite fairly in the line of fire are protected against any sort of nuclear advancements by that nation.
What about the rhetoric? There's been so much discussion about President Trump's rhetoric when it comes to North Korea, for example, but also during that first month of his administration, the difficult, some would argue, rude phone call as it relates to his discussion with the Prime Minister of Australia. Avis, where are you on the diplomacy versus the obtuse rhetoric? Are you a carrot and stick kind of person? What kind of president would you be?
Well, I think you have diplomats for a reason. Mm-hmm. You have people who have spent their professional careers understanding what's going on in different nations. In my real life right now, I do a lot of work with various different U.S. embassies around the world, and there are people that spend their entire careers and are experts in those countries where they're stationed. Why would you not rely on that intellectual capital that's already there to help you develop strategies and to build relationships with their counterparts in those nations in order to reach towards some conclusion that both sides can come to some agreement with? You know, to me, obviously, for me, use of force would be the very, very... I tend not to move in that direction. I think we should avoid wars at all costs.
Mm-hmm.
And so if you're going to avoid that, you have to be a lot better with sort of ramping up your diplomatic force in terms of a stick. Like I said, to me, with certain nations, sanctions to me would be my first choice rather than sending troops over there to start something that we all know is never easy to end.
Mm-hmm. I'm going to take a break. Same question for Larry. About international diplomacy, what kind of president would he be when it comes to dealing with the North Koreas, the Russias, the Irans? Yeah, all of those things. We'll be back in just a moment. We're also going to talk to Robert calling from Laurel. Robert, stay with us. 202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. We'll be back in a moment. Welcome back to The Daily Drum on Sirius XM Channel 141. I'm Harold Fisher. We are asking tonight, if you were president of the United States, what would you do? How would you lead America? Let me go back to Larry. So when you're dealing with some of these enemies of America, for lack of a better term, North Korea, Russia, and the like, how do you deal with them? Do you use strong rhetoric? Do you use diplomacy? How do you address that?
Well, part of being smart is kind of knowing what you're dumb at. So if you know you're not a diplomatic person, or that particular part of the country is not your expertise, then you had to, like my girl just said, you had to rely on the people who are experts. And so because Donald Trump is a narcissist, he thinks he knows everything, and here's someone who got military deferment, so they didn't have to go in the military. They do a lot of tough talking. And people who've been in war, who've been in action, who've served their country, they kind of understand what it's about. And they're less reluctant to do that. Like, I've been in war. I was in the Persian Gulf War. I served in, you know, first Persian Gulf War. So I kind of understand that that's not something that you want to do. And then when you're dealing with someone like the president of North Korea, who's a dictator, or Vladimir Putin, these guys are like crazy, man. You can't sit up there and think you're going to out-talk them toughly, mm-hmm. because they're basically dictators. So you have to use sanctions, you hurt them economically, and you have to do different things in the wheelhouse to try to get a different advantage. But he's basically one of those guys, mm-hmm. Donald Trump is. He's no different than the president of North Korea or Putin to me, but except he's not as smart.
Yeah. You know, I in the case of North Korea, one of the things that people found extremely disturbing was the fire and fury comment that the president uttered, and the constant tweeting and the like. That kind of rhetoric, I don't necessarily think is helpful. I do agree that you do need to understand the mind of dictators, and I think that there can be, it's like back in the day in the club, you know, you got the guy who's all puffed up and, mm-hmm. and muscled up, and initially he may seem like a threat, but the guy that you really need to be concerned about is the one who quietly says, you don't want any of this.
Right. Right.
And I think that the United States can still be tough.
Mm-hmm.
On those enemies, but again, it's just like in the, you know how it is,
right.
You know, Avis in the street, you better go ahead,
mm-hmm.
go ahead now,
and that's actually what President Obama was. He was that guy,
yeah,
because he you know took out more terrorists and did more drone strikes than George Bush ever did, but mm-hmm. people wouldn't know that because of his cool, you know, exterior and his demeanor. He didn't do a lot of trash talk.
Yeah, absolutely. And sometimes, again, diplomacy isn't always talking loud. Sometimes you're just in a position where you're like, mm-hmm.
Right. They called him an appeaser, and yeah. President Obama was like, "Ask Bin Laden if I'm an appeaser."
there you go. Let me go to Robert. Robert calling from Laurel. Robert, thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
Yes, sir. If we was president, the reason why I say that is, let's broaden the net a little bit. Let's be real tonight, because the only way a change is going to come, first of all, it takes a village to raise a child. Some of my past experiences was present, past, or future. Let's go in the past. We had $2 million, I'm quite sure y'all guys know, invested in crime. Now, if that $2 million, take half of that and give some raises to some of these consumers out here. Because at the end of the day, it takes a village to raise a child, and everybody welfare needs to be met. I mean, if you don't get a raise, that's like isolation to me. I mean, it's very minimum you can do. So let's open some loopholes up. Let's do some placement. Let's focus on some things.
Okay. A bit of economics there. Thank you so much. You know, one of the things that I think is critical, and we didn't talk much about this, and I think that this is a really big disappointment for me, whether it's under this administration or even, you know, the previous administrations, we really need to deal with infrastructure,
mm-hmm.
in this country. Not only for safe traveling and safer, buildings and the like, whether we're talking about roads, whether we're talking about bridges, whether we are talking about our public buildings and the like, but also from an economic standpoint, we all know that federal government contracts to build buildings, and I'm not talking about wall stuff. I'm talking about roads. I'm talking about bridges. I'm talking about not only in our urban centers, but in our suburbs, and even in our rural communities.
New means of transportation, interstate.
Exactly. Whether you're talking about subways, developing new modes of transportation, more efficient. Those kind of things create jobs. They make our cities and our other urban centers, the broader urban centers, I think more efficient, and they employ people. And we just seem to be struggling with that right now. You know, where is the huge infrastructure bill that we heard so much during the campaign? I think if I were president, that would probably be one of the first things that I would do, because I would argue, Avis, that if you were able to get that right off the your plate in your first year, I think a lot of people would have better access or be better able to afford health care. They would be better able to afford decent places to live. They would be able to afford education and the like. And I think infrastructure isn't just about roads and bridges. It's about schools.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
We need to do that. Go ahead, Avis. Yeah,
you're exactly right. And it also, falling under the rubric of infrastructure is, you know, these water systems. This Flint, Michigan is not the only city in this nation that's being poisoned as we speak. It's the one that, you know, we all know the disaster that happened there, but there are lots of cities across this nation that have lead levels much higher than they should be. So all of that needs to be included in an infrastructure plan. And you're exactly right. We're well past due with it, just in terms of making sure that we have decent roads, decent bridges, decent schools, you're saying, for example, and the water works. But in addition to that, we also know that basically it will put people to work, you know, at decent paying jobs. And so if we're going to make sure that people all over this country, and particularly in those communities where, you know, they're still not seeing the growth that a lot of this nation has seen, then this is a way that we can make sure that decent paying job opportunities reach people in both not only urban communities, but also in very rural communities as well.
Mm-hmm. Larry, if you're president, who's your vice president?
Someone that white people hated more than me.
Oh my!
And that way, I'll make sure the vice president got shot before the president, and you know.
But you don't have a name. Come on now,
O.J. Simpson or Flavor Flav.
Oh Lord! Like I asked the wrong person.
You're the second black president, so of course, a lot of people will want to assassinate me. I would not pick such a wonderful replacement as President Obama did with Joe Biden. Like, that was not smart to me.
Okay, Avis.
But on a serious note about infrastructure, Avis, actually, that was one of the things that she said she would do when she was president, and that's why I didn't mention it. But President Obama actually tried to pass infrastructure funding, and of course, the crazies and the
obstructionists
and they blocked everything. Even a lot of the things that they were for under a Republican administration, they blocked it.
Mm-hmm. Avis, who's your vice president?
Well, we need to make it an entirely AKA administration. So
is that a fact?
Okay.
Kamala Harris on, you know. I think we'd make a good team.
Oh, my goodness, baby. I say gang, gang. They gang, gang till they die.
In the house, okay?
Wow.
So we're going there. Mm-hmm. If I were president, it would be a toss-up between Michelle Obama and Oprah Winfrey. I think that it is time for women to be in some of the highest positions of leadership in an administration. And if I am the president, and obviously I'm not a woman, but I think that
the upside of an Obama-Biden president is that you had two very popular, very popular people in the administration. And so if I'm president, I have some sense of popularity, but I think that to have a really strong vice president, not a sycophant, but a strong vice,
Mike Pence.
Yeah.
Oh my God.
Yeah, but someone who is going
is
to
he an Edith Bunker or what?
Yeah, how about that? Now you are telling
the way
your
he looks at him. It makes me wonder, is he like dreaming about him at night? I'm wondering about Mike.
Yeah, it's crazy.
But I do think that if you have somebody like that, Obama Biden, Fisher O'Biden, I'm sorry, Fisher Obama as in Michelle Obama, or Fisher Winfrey, then you have someone who is intelligent, who will tell you when you're wrong, who will speak truth to power, but who will be a good advisor and someone whose counsel you trust. And that's where that's where I would go.
I would pick Inyala Van Zandt.
Oh boy.
And her on the hill, yeah. Right?
Yeah, we need more of that.
Yeah, well I tell you, as a president, you would definitely need some counseling. Yes. And so it would be good to
fix my life.
Fix your life, without a doubt. Boy, I tell you, Dr. Avis Jones DeWeaver and Larry Lancaster, thank you for talking to us. Great conversation. Something for our listeners to think about as we move toward 2020. That is the Daily Drum on Sirius XM Channel 141 for this Monday, February 18th. I'm Harold Fisher. You can tweet us using the hashtag WHURFM. Now stay tuned for The Connection. Good night.